This is a homemade broadcast radio production.
Ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year. Welcome back. This is the Homemade Broadcast. It's episode 464. This is the live stream, and that means I always have a guest with me the vast majority of the times, and that guest generally is, and with no exception this week, Miss Anna Hummel. Are you still going by she, her pronouns in 2023? Is that safe to assume?
I think so. Yeah. Making some changes this year, but that's not one of them.
Okay. Well, welcome. It's so good to talk to you again. I feel like I saw you a lot in December and with the wedding and then just I disappeared off the face of the earth for about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, as did you, I think. And now we're getting back into it, back to normal life after a long vacation. And it is trying to get back into the swing of things.
Can I just walk people through what's been going on? And I don't even want to say like in my life, but in my sphere. So went to California for 10 days. Great time. 5 days with dad, 5 days with mom, connected with my parents. And I'm really glad I did, even more so now, and that'll make sense once I explain the story. But you know, Will, and it's something that we all know, but we don't really think about. People don't live forever.
That's true.
So,
dropping bombs in 2023, right out of the gate.
Yeah,
with you're gonna die.
Don't live forever, and I kind of was thinking, like, yeah, should I go home on Christmas? So I was like, eh. I was like, I need to go home. Like, I have the time off. I need to see my parents. I literally see them once a year if I'm lucky. Usually, sometimes my dad will come visit sometime in the spring, summer. So that was great. Come back. And I had almost a full week before I went back to work because I got back Wednesday night and I started work on Tuesday. And we had taken off the last Friday of, I believe it was the 18th or something. We had taken that off. So I had almost 3 complete weeks off. No work. Hey, thank you, Bubba. And so I get back. Yesterday was my first day. I feel like I've been at work for like 20 days in a row. So Monday night, okay, I hadn't even gone to work yet. Crazy stuff is happening. You know, I just got back from jiu-jitsu. I come back to the boyfriend's house. I take a shower. He's like, yo, some mad S just happened. I'm like, what? He's like, this football player just fell to the ground. You got to add it to the prep. I say, cool, will do. About 6 minutes later, oh my God, you're not going to believe what just happened. I'm like, what? He's like, a race car driver, because Bubba's very into racing, just died. Snowmobile accident. I'm like, okay, I'll add that to the prep. Maybe 6 minutes later, we get a text from Bubba. His dad just had a massive heart attack and got put on life support.
Oh my gosh.
At this point, I'm like, what? Is he alive? Is he dead? Then it's like more of the logistical, like, am I hosting? Is he going to be here? Is he going to be out for a week? Is he going to be out for 2 weeks? Like, what does this require? So we get back. So yesterday, we start the show, and he had been up for like 12 hours, and it was like 6 a.m. Like, it was crazy stuff. And yesterday happened to be the day that Dr. Dan, another co-host on the show, his dad passed away 2 weeks ago. The funeral was yesterday. And then that same day, an hour before the ceremony is meant to start, Bubba's dad dies.
Mm.
And so, you know, the people, I mean, you feel so bad for everybody, but I mean, there was just so many things that moving parts. So I like get back and it's like, wham, like slam head on the desk. And it's like, I cannot believe like the odds of that happening, of like a funeral happening for one dad and then another dad dying that same day is like insane.
Yeah.
So we've been just kind of going through the motions, trying to help, trying to, you know, so we went to the funeral services. We went to Bubba's sister's house. Like, we're just all over the place. So it's a very interesting start to 2023. That's not really how you want to start off the year with, like, with death.
Yeah.
But that's where I'm at. So how are you doing?
Well, condolences to everybody in that scenario. That's quite scary. I spent some time with my family over the holiday, kept Christmas going, went and saw my dad. And, I guess it's something that you start to think about when they get into like their 60s and, you know, into their 70s too, that, man, you got to value those experiences and that time you get to spend with your family, because one day you won't be able to do that anymore. But yeah, wow. What a way to start 2023. That's a bummer. That's such a bad, like omen.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, this happened on January 2nd was the massive heart attack. And then you had the funeral and then he officially died on yesterday, the 3rd. So pretty crazy stuff. It does remind me of something. This is so weird that I'm saying this, but I saw Bobby Kelly live, which is a comedian for those that don't know. Actually, I probably would have taken you. This was but I ended up taking my roommate. And she kept calling him like Kelly Roberts. Like, she like didn't know his name, and you were like getting so
Kelly Roberts. Yeah, of course, the great Kelly Roberts.
What? So we go, and I remember him saying this joke, and it was like, it was more profound later. But he was like, you know, he said something along the lines of like, "I've got like 25 summers left." Mm. He's like, "That's like a real number, you know. That's not like a out there like 80 years. It's like 25, like you can ballpark like 25 years. That's not an out." He's like, "I got like maybe 20 summers left." And everyone like laughs, and I laughed. And then later I'm like, that's what our parents are kind of going through, except like maybe 15, 20. Like, that's a real number.
I mean, you don't know. It could be even way less. They have on that weekly checkup show I do on Saturdays, one of the sponsors and guests is that Lifeguard Imaging place. That's not sponsored or anything, just saying. And they have this kind of cool thing where they put you in an MRI and they can kind of see if you have any issues that are going on in your body, so you can get them checked beforehand, which is, I even looked into that for getting I wanted to get my dad that for Christmas because he's a mess. He's not in great shape.
Do you really want to know? Like, what does it tell you, like, that you may have cancer, or is it like give your chronological age or your biological age or something like that?
Well, the idea being that, they'll be able to catch it before it becomes noticeable, where it's kind of, you know, hopefully it's not too late to treat something, but it kind of catches it before it becomes a real big issue. And they catch things like heart attacks, cancer, all that type of stuff. It's just so expensive. It's just way out of my price range anyway for a gift. But I mean, it is a cool thing that they're able to do. So I guess now you kind of have that technology where you can kind of know now. I don't know what you would do with that information unless just run to a hospital if it was very negative.
Yeah.
That's terrible, man. And that is, you know, I really did. That was something that I thought about too. Like I said, you know, visiting with my family. I still have a second part of Christmas I need to do with my mom and stepdad. So Christmas is still going for me, really. It hasn't ended yet because I was gone.
It needs to be done. Like, that chapter needs to close. It's the funnest chapter of the year to open and the most devastating to close, because there's so much hype around it. It's the most amount of time off you'll have during the whole year, and so you really look forward to it. You really look forward to the R&R that you're going to get wherever that may be, and also just like the it's a fun, spirited time. You know, people typically are a little bit nicer and a bit more generous, and obviously the holiday parties and whatnot. But when to close that chapter and to try to get back into a routine, minus all the death and funeral that we've been dealing with, but just beyond that, it's always a struggle.
Oh my God.
Weight you've gained, how bad your sleep schedule is, because you're sleeping until 10:30, 11 every morning, you know, that sort of thing. So
that's what I'm dealing with now. I took, you know, not that I'm a physical specimen by any means, but I did have a physical fitness routine that I do in the mornings, which is, I've told you about it many times and probably people are sick of hearing about it, but I'm sort of proud of it because I feel like it's a good amount of work. And I don't really have much to show for it in my body, but it kept me on some sort of just getting outside, getting physical, whatever. So I would do 100 push-ups, 100 squats, 100 sit-ups, 100 like butt raise type things, and then 100 curls. And then I would go run about 4 miles. It's two big laps around the park. So I didn't do that for 17 days, probably. Something
at
like
all,
that.
Like no exercise, like nothing.
No.
No walks.
Well, I mean, there were some walks that were squeezed in here and there, but it was mostly sedentary kind of lifestyle during that time. And oh my God, I tried to do my regular routine yesterday. I am so sore. Like everything hurts. It's like the first day of going back and it's only been 17 days. I mean, that was my normal thing. That was my baseline. So it didn't even really affect me. In fact, I was wondering like, is this even doing me any good anymore? Cause I don't even really notice it, but holy crap. After 17 days, I've been using the massage gun. My skin feels, and maybe it's part of the diet too, that I was not really adhering to. But my skin hurts. You ever heard of that where it's sensitive?
Like all of your skin?
All of my skin feels sensitive. I can't even really use the massage gun on my aching muscles because my skin is sensitive.
I desperately want to Google what's wrong with you right now, but I am going to refrain.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. It's probably just dehydration or something, like not drinking enough water. That's probably what it is.
It's the sugar cookies.
Listen,
who knows?
I'm trying to find a way to get in to go see lifeguard imaging to check for sure. But yeah, I don't know. It was astounding to me, like how fast the wheels can just fall off any sort of, you know, routine that you have. But I mean, that's what it's about. That's what the holiday is about in some sense. I don't know. You probably continued to work out during your holiday, I'm sure, because you're insane.
Yes, I had a bit of a routine where I was going to the gym, the first gym I ever belonged to, right across the street from my dad's house. It's about maybe 0.3, 0.4 mile. It's not far, but it is under a bridge, like a highway bridge. And my dad was desperately afraid that me walking there by myself was not a safe choice, because he thought I would be accosted by a homeless person under the bridge. And he was at work, otherwise he would just take me to the gym. So he forced me to have a taser. So I walked in the morning. It was a beautiful walk, but in my pocket, I had a taser locked and loaded in case some homeless guy or gal or non-binary, whatever, decided to approach me. I was ready, and I didn't listen to headphones on the way. Like I was fully like engaged in my surroundings. But yeah, walk to the gym and back every day to work out. Cause I'm like, what else am I going to do? Like I get up and I'm on East Coast time. So I'm up at like 6. Mm-hmm. My dad's like leaving for work and I'm by myself for 6 hours. I'm like, I can't, if I've had a full night of sleep and I feel rested and I have one cup of coffee, I am like, I'm on Adderall. Like I need to move. Like I need to get the demons out somehow. So me walking to the gym, working out, and walking back was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have the same thing except with coffee. It's just like I'll just have a drink. I'll have a glass of bourbon or something
in the morning.
I mean, there was a few times maybe some Irish coffees were had during that time. I mean, it's a celebration. We're celebrating a new year. We're celebrating our Lord and Savior.
We're celebrating Wednesday. It doesn't matter.
I mean, at that point, it didn't matter. I didn't have to be at work. I kind of worked. You know, quote unquote, at my day job, I brought my computer with me and did most of my duties, but it was pretty slow during that time. So I didn't have to necessarily take vacation days. I could kind of just like check in, you know, from time to time. Yeah. And it's amazing how much of work can be done from your iPhone. I'm still astounded by that. I would say 75% of the work can be done from my phone. Which is wild and awesome too at the same time. Yeah. I hate the social construct term and people, it's overused, but man, COVID, if nothing else, has kind of shown that you didn't really need to be going to an office for 9 to 5 for that period of time. You can work, and most jobs are fake anyways that people are doing. So the fake jobs. The
thing that people used to believe in, which I think is like team synergy, like being in person and seeing people, that used to be a thing people yearned for, even. Even if people complained about going to work, like there was an element of like you were more productive. You got the, you know, every once in a while lunch is catered, like you look forward to stuff like that, you get free coffee, whatever it is, like people enjoy that aspect of like corporate life. But that was completely eradicated, and much like you said, most people were like, I'm never getting out of my pajamas ever again. Now that would be detrimental for my mental health, but some people it works for them, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, my regular garb, I would say even when I did have to go to work, it was very casual. So it's kind of just like a pair of workout shorts and either like a t-shirt, tank top,
yeah,
whatever, long sleeve tee, maybe what I got on now. That was kind of the normal thing anyway. So if I put those things on, I do feel like I'm dressed. And not in PJs or anything. And most of the other times, if I'm not in that, I'm just nude. I sleep in the nude. I walk around my house nude most of the time. Or if I don't have to be anywhere, I don't want anybody else to see it. But you know, it's just more comfortable. Less clothes, well, the better.
The beauty of just of being, you know, in a dwelling by yourself is you don't have to worry about how you look.
There was
sometimes you don't even want to see you because you'll judge you.
No, like, I don't know.
I'm just like, why do I have mirrors in the house? Like, this is disgusting. I have to like see this, you know?
Yeah, no way.
Yeah.
That was one of the challenges that I faced. I was in North Carolina for over the holiday. And they had that severe weather storm bomb cyclone that even affected the area of North Carolina. It got down to, I think it was 5 degrees was the cold there, which was insane. I've never experienced cold like that in my life. And, you know, part of it was just, I wanted to experience it. I wanted to, I was hoping for snow, ended up not happening. But it was projected that it might. So I was kind of excited about that. I also forgot a jacket. I did not bring, my winter jacket with me up there. I forgot it. And, so I had to kind of make shift to borrow clothes from people that were around that were nice enough to give me clothes. But one of the things I did was just go stand outside, and I may have been, intoxicated during this, which helped. And I would just went outside in socks and a long sleeve tee. And I think I had jeans on, and I just stood outside in 7 degrees to see how long I could take it. And it got to the point where my hands started to kind of freeze a little bit after a pretty short period of time. And I was just, the curiosity side of my brain was just dumbfounded by how it could be this cold and people could still like survive in it. And dressing was a challenge because I had to put on pants, and I had to put on like a long sleeve flannel and jackets and scarves and hats. And I was like, this is just ridiculous. It's too much clothes. I will say I did look better, though. I felt like I looked like a normal human being in that garb. That's the way.
No butt crack showing
because I had the shirt tucked in. You know, I had a jacket on, long jacket. I had boots on my feet, not flip-flops or anything like that. I liked the way I looked. I felt like I looked like an adult male. But man, what a challenge it was just to be around.
It's really quite shocking when you're not used to it, because you're not used to going outside and it like it hurts your face.
Yeah.
Like I remember, I mean, I lived in Detroit for 4 years, so I know cold. And I remember just going outside. I'm like, my face hurts. It feels like needles in my face. And you already know I have issues like with circulation.
Right. Like,
hands get really cold, they get really dry. I mean, like, sometimes I go outside just to go to my car and like to start it or something, and I don't have mobility. Like, it wasn't even like, oh, they hurt, they're cold, like I can't use them. Like, I couldn't use a pen. Like you said, they freeze up and they're just kind of like stuck like this until, you know, you get more blood flow to your hands, and then you get more of the minute motor functions back in your hands and in your extremities. So it is wild, but I do have to say you get used to it pretty quick because you don't have a choice. So one of the worst things that, you know, because I was poor and still am poor to some degree, less poor, but poor, is if you live in like cold weather, you need a car that has auto start. So you can start that car 5-10 minutes before you leave. Me, I had to get my ass downstairs, put on the jacket, start the car, leave it running, hope no one steals it, go back in my house, do something for 15 minutes, and then come back in. Because there's no way I could even, like, drive or see or whatever, you know. So that was probably – and then that was just to go, like, a mile down the road to Walmart to go shopping, and then it was, like, the same thing on the way back. It's an absolute nightmare. Everything takes way longer, you know, to go to the store, to go to work. Like, times it by 2.5. Like, it's crazy. So
– yeah. Yeah, that was I started to feel like my blood started to thicken up a little bit. But as soon as I got home, and it's weird that the Florida cold is, it's definitely not cold, but it's kind of like that humid cold, which in my opinion is kind of worse. I was shivering more here when I got back than when I was up north. And it was like 48 degrees. So I don't know, there's something about that humid cold that for me anyways, I thought was worse in some ways, obviously not worse than 7. So you said that you had a, or your dad was concerned at least, which in California, he lives in a kind of like a suburb of, it's close to San Diego, right?
Yes. It's part of like how Largo is to Tampa.
Okay. You know? Gotcha.
Like, I live in Tampa, but you live in Largo. Okay. So, or you live in Tarpon Springs. It's like that.
Yeah. So not really. No, not like Skid Row, not Los Angeles, not really like a homeless person place necessarily. Right. I mean, I'm sure you do have them. I think everywhere has.
Yeah. Where my dad lives is pretty congested. Like, there's more and more people. And I'm also noticing that the, demographics are changing. So where my dad lives, because I feel like it used to be like more of a not a ritzy area, but, you know, maybe more affluent, like more. My mom had a business for almost 30 years, was more of a affluent area. And now it's more like El Paso, like it's right over the border or something. Not that that's a problem with the demographics, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, people who don't have the papers and things like that. I've noticed is just higher.
Mm-hmm.
That makes
okay. So, but basically, he was being a little overdramatic about you getting accosted by some sort of demented drug addict, you know, person without a home.
You know, everybody thinks you're paranoid until you're prepared. So my dad definitely errs on the side of caution for sure. But I don't think he was being like outrageous. And then once I just went, because I'm like, he's like, I hope you don't go. But if you do, here's a taser. And I went, I'm like, I'm fine. Then he's like, all right, well.
Are tasers real?
Huh?
Are tasers real? Meaning, are they effective?
I think so. I mean, he showed me how to, you know, use it and stuff. And I saw the spark stuff come out. So I assume that probably doesn't feel good, or at least the sound is very, you know,
scary.
I feel like that in and of itself would make someone want to run away.
Yeah. I question, well, if it's somebody who's mentally ill or, you know, on some sort of drug, it probably wouldn't affect them too. I think with electricity, it can be high amp, low ohms. Or one of them, if it's higher ohm, it's got to be a certain frequency to be, you know, effective as self-defense. And I think a lot of the ones that you can buy at the stores are more for to scare people than actually to hurt them. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of speculating.
Yeah, I had no problems whatsoever with anyone on the street. The only problems I had were with the California drivers, which, you know, Florida drivers are known for being bad. But again, what I experienced in my 10 days home, I'm like, this is getting worse. People can't be on their phones. You can't be talking on the phone, but you can be looking at your phone. So that's great. That was great. So there was a lot of times where I almost got run over, even if it was like my right of way. So I always made eye contact with the driver, do the wave, they wave back, then I cross. But I would never just like, oh, the white Walkman's up, like time for me to go, because I would have gotten hit like 5 times.
Wow. So I will say that I kind of brought up the homeless thing, which I believe we're calling housing insecure, I believe is the new terminology in regarding homeless individuals. But that's neither here nor there. I was in Greensboro, North Carolina, and I don't know what your perception is of Greensboro, North Carolina, if you even have any, if you've ever been there. But I kind of thought it was like this small, sleepy southern town. And when I got there, it was more Florida man than any part of Florida that I've ever been in. It was insane. And the Uber driver, when I was coming in, said, oh, Greensboro is crazy. And I was like, really? I don't think so, but we'll see. It was right downtown. It's a very small downtown there. We were in this condo unit sandwiched in between two businesses. It had you put in a code, you got buzzed in. There was a unit on the second floor, a unit on the third floor. We were at the top on the third floor. First night, we're at this holiday party, and we come back, get dropped off. Cops have completely surrounded this main block. There's cops walking around with AR-15s. There's people crying, which I was like, what is going on? And I think I pieced it together that they were actually like releasing some sort of pepper spray or pepper bomb to disperse a crowd that was there. Apparently a fight or something had spilled out onto the streets of downtown Greensboro, and the cops had to be called in to break it up. And I was like, wow, this is nuts. And it was right where I needed to be. So we just like snuck in real quick and locked the door and ran upstairs and kind of watched the calamity unfold from up high in the iron rafters. So we did that. That was the first night. So that was strike one where I was like, wow, this is pretty crazy. Next night, Sunday, technically Monday morning. And I know it's a holiday, but it isn't the holiday yet. It's still like got a few, you know, Christmas isn't till Sunday. It's like 1 week away. There's just screaming on this block. There seems to be some sort of fight that's about to take place. One guy finally gets in his car and drives away. The other fellow he was yelling at didn't like that he was driving away and took a crowbar and threw it through his back window and just shattered the glass.
You saw this.
I didn't see it. Julia saw it. So she watched this whole thing go down. Smash. I just stayed in bed. I was like, I'm not even. But she got up and watched this whole thing. No cops showed up. No nothing. Just that thing happened, and then people went their own separate ways, which I'm glad it didn't turn into something else. I guess it was just a broken window. I guess that's good. So then Christmas Eve night. So that's strike two. Then Christmas Eve night, strike three happens. It's really cold. It's that really, really cold night where I was standing outside drunk in a short sleeve shirt to feel the cold. We go back, put in the code. At this place, get dropped off in an Uber, put in a code, walk in the first staircase there, reeks of cigs. So strong. Like somebody has just been chain smoking all night long in this hallway. Cause it's a 3-story, you know, unit. So there's a lot of space in between there. And I mean, it is so strong, so strong. And I'm like, well, that's not good. So I'm thinking maybe the people in the second unit are like partying or something. I don't know. And they're just partying with cigs, I guess. I don't know. I'm pretty intoxicated at this point. Walk up the stairs, get to the second level, come around to the third level, start walking up those stairs. And I can see straight ahead, there's a rooftop balcony up there. And that door is wide open. And I'm like, oh my God, it's freezing in here. Wide open, reeks of cigs. Okay, so as I get around to the front door, which, by the way, these doors in these units are not exterior doors. These are basically just a door, like a new interior door, like something you'd see on a bathroom on a new construction house, like kind of thick, but not really. Like if you just put a shoulder into it, it's going right over. And as I turn the corner to put in the code, there's just a man sleeping right near the right near, and he's I get it. I'm like, I don't know what to do right now because this dude is just like a housing insecure man. You know, he doesn't have a home. He's cold. He's just trying to stay warm. But he's
in the unit in front of the door leading to your unit.
He's inside in the, I don't know what the word for it is. The foyer.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you would call it. He's just right out in front, like under the crack so he can get some heat, you know? So he didn't put his shoulder into the unit and like break in into the main unit. He just kind of snuck in either. I'm trying to figure out how. I don't know how he did that.
But it's on the third. He's on the third floor.
Third floor. And what I thought was like, maybe they're street smart. I mean, they live on a street, so they know, they're like, this is an Airbnb. A lot of times people aren't even there. You know, this would be a good place you can sneak in. The patio is like, you know, open most of the time. You could just kind of just hang out in there. Nobody will bother you. So I kind of didn't know what to do. So I just kind of went, hey. And he kind of stirred and went, huh? And then I go, something like, what do I do in this situation? I don't really want to call the cops, okay? I feel like, but also, what if this is a mental patient and he tries to kill me or something? And I'm thinking, yeah.
You're so not the type, like, you're not, and I don't think you'll take offense to this because I think you'll agree with me, but you're not the type of person to, especially when you're drunk, like, you're not the type of person to, like, bark at someone.
No,
like,
I'm not.
No. Like, that's not your character at all.
Definitely not.
Because some guys that you know, that I've rolled with before as friends or otherwise would, like, you know, be all aggro about it and try to scare the guy off, you know, get in their face, you know, just kind of, like, intimidate them. But you're like, buddy, like, you awake? I know it's cold, but you gotta go, buddy.
Like, I mean, I'm not a coward. I don't want it to sound like that. I just didn't. And I guess maybe I was. Maybe I kind of wussed out on this situation because.
No, not a violent. You never start with aggression. Like, you may end up there because you have to.
Yeah.
But you start with, like, being aggressive.
It was just the fact of being. And, like, I always have the. A lot of people don't have this, I guess. But when you're intoxicated, I always have the sober voice in the back of my head, which has served me very well. I can enjoy the. Process of intoxication, but I still have the voice in my head that goes, you need to do this, you need to be responsible, whatever. So I'm thinking, like, what do I do here? And maybe if it was at home, I would have felt like, hey, scram, get out of here type of thing. But I was like, this is not my hometown. I don't really know what else to do. And I had my girlfriend with me too, so that was another thing I was thinking about. Let's say he freaks out, throws me down the stairs, and then I'm knocked out or something. And then what? So I just go, I'll just call the cops. So I wussed out, called the cops. They showed up pretty quick. And while I was on the phone, they were asking me questions that I didn't really have the answer to. Like, I didn't know what he looked like. He was a huddled mass. You know, he was a textbook definition of what a housing insecure individual would look like, where he was just, like, covered in, and it was cold, so he was just covered up. I didn't see what he looked like. And then they were asking me, like, can you do anything? And I was like, you want me to do something? And they're like, well, no, just, like, can you, like, tell him to frig off? Or I forget exactly how they worded it. But I was like, that's kind of what I called you for. I don't know to. And they were like, okay. So they sent some guys. And as I was on the phone, he scurried out and left. And they were just kind of like, did you see where he went? I'm like, no. What was he wearing? You know, all the, I don't, it was rags. I don't really know. And they go, yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's cold outside tonight. I go, yeah, I know. No, don't make me feel bad about it. Like, I get it. I understand why this person did this.
Why did you offer him the couch?
You know, if he didn't smoke cigs, maybe I would have, but it was just too intense of cig smoke to invite him in. No, I don't know. Like, I felt bad because I totally understand this person's plight and they're just trying to stay alive because he couldn't have stayed alive on the streets in that temperature. It was too cold. And, you know, but what am I, you know, what, I don't want him sleeping in front of the Airbnb. I'm sorry. I'm being selfish.
You know? No, you're being selfish, but, like, so is he. Like, I don't even understand like why being selfish is necessarily a bad thing. It's like you have to put your own best interests at the forefront of your life, otherwise, because no one else is going to. And that's what that guy's doing, and you should be able to do that. And you're not infringing it. Listen, you paid for this place or whatever, you know, like you essentially own that place for 10 days or whatever it is. That's your place. That's your dwelling. And when you have someone like you don't know, like you said, he could be a threat. He could hurt you. He could hurt your girlfriend. I think that you're being responsible because you don't want to aggravate him. And that's why you call the cops, like send over the people that deal with crazy mental patients and know how to do it, because you're not trained and you're drunk and you don't want to upset him where he hurts you.
Yeah.
But you also don't want him to stay there. So like, what do you do?
Yeah.
You
know? Well, that was the only option at that point. And I still feel like I probably did the right thing, but I do, part of me, the empathy side of me, and you're not wrong at all in what you're saying. And I totally agree with you, and you're right. But it's like, he's just trying to get out of the cold and stay alive. That's all. But
you can understand that and still call the cops. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's complicated.
They said, you know, well, it's cold outside. We have a shelter open tonight that we everybody can kind of stay and stay. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's where that person should be then. Then I'm like, yeah, those places suck. They're probably dangerous. They're probably mental patients in there who are not being treated with any sort of medication. Maybe this guy is just one of those, you know, weird cases where they're actually just like, I'm normal, I'm just down on my luck, you know, type of thing. I don't really think those really exist. Very few, with all the services, private and kind
usually
of government.
Those people live in a car.
Yeah, but eventually, you know, you lose the car too. I think it's very
rare. Usually you're not that down and out where you're, if you're homeless for more than like 3 months, then you're like homeless in your mind. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if you're just down on your luck, usually I'd say it's like 6 months tops. And then you have to either go to like rehab or like you have an addiction problem. Like you have to deal with trauma. Like, it's not like you're just down on your luck. Like,
yeah,
there's some other.
No, I agree. And I think it's probably like 95%. I'm just guessing here, but are either mentally ill or dependent on some sort of substance, or in many cases, both, because they're mentally ill and they self-medicate with drugs and alcohol and stuff. So I do feel, and I don't think there's a solution for it, but I did feel empathy for that person, but also I was conflicted, you know, but I still would have done what I did. Now, I mean, obviously, you can't have a homeless man sleeping outside of your door. That's an interior door that and not only a homeless, just like anybody couldn't. There's some stranger. I wouldn't allow that to be the case. But it was a weird conflict that I didn't think that I would have, that I ended up, you know, having, which I thought was unusual.
I think you're a much more, honestly and truly, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I think you are a much more compassionate person than I am. Because
yeah,
I can feel
sorry
for someone to a certain point and never feel conflicted about like tattling on them or ratting them out if they are like a threat to me. You know, not if it's not a threat to me. I'm not saying I'm a rat and I go around telling on people, but like, I could feel sorry for this guy and go like, yeah, he's got all these issues, but also, and more importantly, that's not my problem.
Right.
That's your problem. Sounds like a you problem.
Yeah.
And your problems are infringing on my life. And now we have a problem here and you need to go. But I also think that might be compounded by the fact that I have a female brain and that more people are threatening to me than they are to you, just overall. A strange man like at my house is an absolute no-go.
Yeah.
But with you might be like not the greatest, but I feel like I could take him if need be. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So yeah, I agreed, and I do want to try to understand what's happening in the world, and also understanding that some of these problems that we have, there are no solutions for. And I just feel bad for where they're at and how they got here. And I've talked to, you know, St. Pete is a homeless haven. I mean, it's always kind of been like that. And there was a few guys that I talked to. One guy used to ask me to, like, you know, like the working kind, like guys that will actually do stuff for real to get their money, but then they're buying booze with the money or drugs or whatever. Like, he's not like, I'm trying to get off the streets and raise money. Like, he's like, I'm trying to wash a car for 10 bucks so I can go buy some six pack.
Yeah, or whatever.
He was
yeah.
one of those guys. He was just honest about his situation. I remember asking him point blank, like, what could society do to help you? And he was just like, nothing. Nothing. We're just that small percentage that kind of fall through the cracks, and some of them pull out of it.
Small percentage. I think that's like probably the majority.
Yeah. I mean, some of them pull out of it and they, you know, I have a friend that's now works with the homeless. And she was on drugs. And but she got herself out of it, and now she's like a part of society again. So there are a percentage of people that can't actually, you know, break through and get back. But a lot of them are just, there's always a like, nothing's perfect. There's always weird numbers out there. And there's like a small percentage, I don't know what it is, 0.5% or whatever, that can't fit within that construct of social construct of what society is, or living in a society, just not able to do that. And then what do you do with those people? Do you force them to go somewhere, into a mental hospital?
I feel like my take on that is probably not the popular opinion, but I'm also a heartless B word, so I've said some things on the air that people maybe don't agree with. But I think that if you are homeless, maybe something like a three strikes rule, where, you know, you get Narcan twice, three times maybe, and then on the fourth time we just let God take the wheel. You know, that's something that I've suggested. People don't seem to like that. It's like, okay, so you just want to keep resuscitating these people so that they continue to live this life and, you know, suck up more resources. And it's like, what's the point? Just go. But a lot of people don't like hearing that. So.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you necessarily, but also I think there's hope that, like my friend, she was able to break through eventually. And there's the hope of like saving, you know, their lives, but most of them are probably lost causes. I think.
Yeah.
That's,
and I mean,
true.
I would argue that your friend, and I'm glad that she was able to pull through, but I would argue that your friend is the exception, not the rule.
Oh, you
know?
For sure.
100%. And it's like, okay, well, you know, do you do all of that? Do you try to save, you know, 100,000 people so that like 10 can work at McDonald's? Like, again, that's horrible. And you should, you know, but if we're being intellectually honest, that's how we crunch numbers when it comes to, you know, cost benefit analysis. And we did that with COVID. It's like, you know, but I want to go to work. It's like, well, is your work and your business like more important than a human life? It's like, well, like, you know, you have to start like asking these like hard questions. Like, sometimes, yeah. Like, is it worth it to save grandma who's only got maybe 3 years left at most? And, or like your life savings is destroyed? Like, you know, if you start having to ask those kind of unpopular questions that nobody really wants to answer. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Drew said unhoused, I believe, is the new made up word because homeless people don't have more to worry about than what other people call. This came from, I believe it was Roger and JP, and Monica said that it was offensive to call people homeless, that the new word was housing insecure, which I really loved. I thought that was great. And now I use it in my vernacular, which is weird because I think it's obviously silly. But also, I'm using it now. I say housing insecure all the time now instead of homeless. Yeah, it is a made-up word.
That's because you are like the opposite of the Colbert Report. You know what I mean? Like, you
too meta for my own good.
You know what I mean? Like, you are the opposite of that. You are playing a character that you are not, to appear that you are like, you know, sensitive or PC, when really you are like a cool guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it is kind of one of those weird meta things, I guess. Yeah. But I use it now, and I guess that's all that matters, really. You know, at least superficially. But yeah, it is a made up word. That's the thing with these new words where you say housing insecure. The problem with that is that it means homeless. It's just longer. So when you change the meanings of these words, or change the phrase or whatever, and deem one offensive and the other one isn't, but it means the exact same damn thing. So that's what the silly part with all this, but I got a big kick out of that. And that was, I heard the clip and it was good. I think it's on their best of clips. So you go check that out, on your own time. But yeah, so this kind of steered off into weird directions. I'm glad we got to catch up a little bit. I know you probably got to go. We didn't even get to talk about the Buffalo Bills player that went down at the game. I'm kind of glad because I didn't want to really speculate about it, but I'm sure you have feelings about it. Maybe we'll know more next week and we can kind of talk about it more then.
That sounds good.
Thank you so much for joining. It's good to be back. It was a good way to kind of ease into the new year. And I have these stickers, by the way, that right here I'm putting up on the...
Hey,
look at that. Pretty good. Got a few of those. Many of you have reached out and I've mailed them to you. So if you're in the continental United States, one guy, he didn't answer me back. I think his name was Neil, asked if I shipped internationally. And I was like, absolutely not. But I don't know what it would cost to mail. It's probably not that much. So you know what? If it's not super expensive, Neil, and you happen to be listening to this, hit me back and let me know what part of the planet you're on. And I'll get you a bunch of stickers. Because I want this to be a worldwide presence. I think that's kind of cool. So if you want some, just email me thehomemadebroadcast@gmail.com or slip into my DMs, home_made_man, Instagram and Twitter, and I'll get some out to you for free.
Free 99. I like it. Will, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna Hummel. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Join us next week on Radio St. Pete. If you're listening over there, Sundays around 6 o'clock, I think, p.m. If you're listening on Radio St. Pete, stay tuned. Frank Rivera's Jazz Show is up next, followed by The Indie Circuit. If you're listening on podcasts, thank you. Please do subscribe. Extra content is there whenever I'm not on the air on The Johnny B Show, HMB Radio, Hotel Mike Bravo Radio, on your favorite podcast app and willsyoutube.com. Have a good week. For Anna Hummel, my name is Will Koontz. Talk to you soon. Bye.
You have found The Homemade Broadcast on RadioSaintPete.com.